AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Είστε παρέα με το SBS Ελληνικά.
We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands, skies and waterways and pay our respects to all elders past and present. We pay our respects to the world's oldest continuing culture.
Hello everyone. My name is Pano Apostolou. You're listening to a podcast from SBS Greek. Today on our program, we turn our attention to the Greek language. Not that we don't do it many times in this program, but today is a special occasion. With us today is Professor Joseph Lobianco. He's Professor Emeritus of Language and Literacy Education at the University of Melbourne and President of Pharos Alliance. We'll talk about that later, about Pharos. Professor, thank you for accepting our invitation.
It's a pleasure. Nice to see you.
I'd like to know your migration story. We don't often ask, you know, academics about their migration story, but let's hear it from you. And also, as a second part of the question is, where is this love for the languages coming from?
I was born in Victoria, northeast Victoria, a town called Myrtleford. And my parents migrated from Calabria in the south of Italy, and we spoke Calabrese, our family dialect, at home. And I didn't really encounter English until I went to school. I lived on isolated farms. Mm-hmm. And my parents were tobacco share farmers, and my father worked on the railways, laying railway sleepers, and my mother was working in agriculture as well. So they had the normal, difficult, very hard-working migrant life of that period of time in the 50s and 60s. I was lucky enough to be able to go to university in Melbourne, and I did an economics and political philosophy degree. I was always interested in my parents' struggle with English and with questions of language, but mainly as an observer. And I did this degree in economics and political philosophy. I enjoyed and still enjoy the philosophy of power, which is what political philosophy is. In the course of this, I became aware of how I had to kind of relook at my own childhood. And I started to work in migrant welfare issues in Melbourne, the first lot of Timorese refugees, migrant women workers in factories in Melbourne. And language issues came to the fore. So my first interest was not linguistics, but language and social justice, you know, the ways in which language made a difference to the opportunities that people had in life. So on the basis of that, I went back to university and I specialized in language studies. So I changed direction from economics and political philosophy to linguistics.
Did you say you grew up in farms?
Yes.
In Victoria?
Yes.
And you were not comfortable with English. How did the local behave towards you and your family? Do you have any issues?
Oh, yes. There was a lot of rejection of migrants at the time. There was a very, very large Italian population in that part of Victoria.
What's the name of the
area? Myrtleford is the name of the town. But my parents settled in and developed a lot of local friends, and we all adapted, and it became basically a half-Italian town for a large part of my childhood. All these districts of northeast Victoria. There are also a lot of Croatian families. I grew up with what were then Yugoslav families, and there were some Greeks, but mostly Southern Europeans of other kinds, Spanish, Maltese, mostly Italian, and some Lebanese. And then when I came to Melbourne, different configuration of ethnic groups, of course. But I was on isolated farms, and for some period of time, we didn't have television, so I didn't interact with any English speakers whatsoever. So it was like being in a real bubble.
When did you start being involved with the Greek language? Was only when you started the Faroes Initiative, or was before that?
No, much before that. Mid to late 1970s, early 1980s, I was working on multicultural policy, advocating for it. And many of the leaders of that project and that advocacy were Greek Australians, and they were friends of mine, people I worked with and knew. So I had a long connection with Greek Australian advocates and organisations right back then. A lot of friends within the Greek community, and it had always been an extension of my normal life.
Okay, the first question is this. If a listener understands Greek well but hesitates to speak, what's the very first thing he has to do on a daily basis?
Before I answer that, let me just say one thing, and that is that what's happening with Greek today is the normal pattern of what we call language attrition that happens to any immigrant language. That is intergenerational language loss. From the first generation that speaks, like in my family's case, Calabrese Italian, and then standard Italian, or Greek, or Maltese, or Spanish, whatever language, Vietnamese, Chinese, within the second or third, and usually definitely by the fourth generation, children, grandchildren by this stage of the original migrants, have shifted to using mostly English. Now, that happens in Australia, America, France, or Argentina, any country of immigration. It would be the same pattern of migrants in Greece. Right. Children want to adapt and be part of the community that they belong to. There's often social pressure not to be different. There can be racism. All of us have experienced that. Anyone who grew up in the 50s and 60s in Australia, that was a definite part of our experience. Hostility to the use of other languages. All of this is part of our history, very deeply there, and it's part of what pushed me to become interested in this again. So this is a normal pattern. So what happens is that the children, the second generation and third generation children, hear Greek in their parents' and grandparents' home, but reply in English. Mm-hmm. So these are bilingual and trilingual homes. And if they marry out, they might marry, say, you know, someone from another language community, then they're raising their own children in a very complex environment. And that usually promotes language loss. The common language will be English. So you have to make a very substantial effort to keep Greek active. How do you do that? Well, you have to do it not just by studying the language. The whole basis of the Faros Initiative is to extend the effort of language retention beyond just study. Study is good. Of course, you need to learn the language. You need to learn its words and grammar. But there are many, many examples in the world of people who know a language but don't use it, because using a language is not just about knowing it. It's about having easy social relationships in which the identity is one of speaking that language. And for a lot of Greek Australian young people, they identify as Greek Australian. They love going back to Greece. They're proud of their families and their history. It's not like they have any problems or shame about their Greekness.
No, but they're shy.
That's right.
Many times they tell me that, Pano, I know how to speak the Greek, but I'm shy. Is that true? They're faking it or they're lying?
No, it's true. There's a lot of research, and the Faros research is based on international evidence, which we collected. I've worked in Ireland on exactly this problem with the Irish language. In many, many parts of the world, I did my PhD in the United States on this kind of thing. It's a common phenomenon. Mm-hmm. So knowing a language is having knowledge. Using a language is a different thing. And shyness really means, it's a very common phenomenon, it really means the inability to get over this idea that it's easier to speak in English, I will make a mistake if I say something in Greek, or they will tell that I'm not really very fluent, or maybe I'm not very well educated, or I have an English accent. These things might sound maybe even trivial to some people, but it's enough to put people off using the language.
What do we do?
Well, two things have to happen. Firstly, the wider community has to accept that a learner will make mistakes, that they can sound non-standard. You know, they won't sound like highly educated young people in Athens. And that these transitional phases are necessary to improve and become more like a fluent speaker. But unfortunately, there's a lot of judgment that goes on, a lot of stigma, a lot of putting down. And young people pick this up very quickly. They pick it up very, very fast. And, you know, there's so much anthropological research on this, and it can be a tiny thing. Like, I did a study in Ireland myself, and we met one particular young girl who was a very fluent speaker of Irish. She'd learnt it in the school. And when someone said to her in the course of these interviews we were doing, it was a government project, why she didn't use it, she said, well, you know, I've learnt formal language at school, but I'm a joker and I know about music and that's what I like to joke about with my friends. I can't do any of that in Irish. So you see, her own personal identity as this fun person was denied to her in this language that they were trying to save. So we need to think of the life of young people, their own identity, their own struggles, their own self-image. And this is what in the Pharos thing we call desire. The desire of the young learner not to be just a Greek Australian, but to be a Greek Australian who's happy to use the language and accepts that the mistakes are part of the process of learning. Unfortunately, there's too much judgment of them, and so sometimes they pull back and don't want to use it.
And also I feel that there is this movement now that people of second, third, fourth generation, they try to establish a Greek identity without knowing the Greek language. We don't care if we know the Greek language, since we know how to dance in Greek dances, how to cook Greek food, how often we go to Greece, how much love we have about the Greek and ancient Greek history. Find it, in my personal opinion, kind of an excuse not to try harder to learn your language. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's an excuse, but there's certainly a psychological question here, which is why the model that I put into the Pharos research. Remember, I was asked to do this by the Modern Greek Teachers Association. I had worked with many Greek Australian educators for a long time, and the Teachers Association, there were friends of mine. Maria Dikeo was the president at the time. She asked me to do this research. Now, at the time, I was working in Myanmar, in Burma, for a UN project, actually, on language rights. And so I was coming back between Australia and that country. And eventually, I was able to find the time to do this research. And I remember talking to Maria and other people in the Modern Greek Teachers Association committee. And I said, but it goes beyond language study and language learning. You can have any number of programs. People might become quite good at grammatical knowledge of the language, but not using it, like choosing not to use it or choosing to switch over to English, can be devastating. And so it isn't just a question of shyness. We have to understand what's behind it.
And there are laziness.
There's two things behind it. One of it is that there are not many opportunities for actually using it. If you go around among Greek Australian clubs, in societies, and lots of things, there's a lot of English. So you have to make the extra special effort to do it in Greek, and that's more than some people want to do. But the other thing is exactly what's going on in the psychology of the individual, their desire, this shyness, this embarrassment. And that, I think, is a serious issue that needs to be researched. So that's why we have within our model, we call it COD, capacity, learning the language, opportunity, creating more opportunities for children to actually use it in Australia, in which it's okay to be a learner, to be making mistakes, no one jumps on you, but they encourage you, obviously, to improve. You know, you have to always try and get towards a standard language as much as possible, but you know, you get there through the process of trial and error and correction. And then the third thing, the most important thing, is this question of desire. Because if it's only spoken in the house of your ya-ya, then it's not very common that you're going to experience this. She might even understand the English that you use. You're going to get away with it. You know, you're going to manage this. So the actual desire to make that extra effort is something that they have to come to believe is important. So, yes, identifying as a Greek Australian, but identifying as a Greek Australian who speaks Greek, that is a separate thing.
What do you think about the apps on our phones or tablets that people use in order to learn a foreign language, and now they also use the artificial intelligence? Is there enough evidence to believe that this type of learning a language actually works, it can work?
The first thing I should say is that this is a multi-billion dollar industry. So obviously there are trash apps, and then there are very, very good ones. Mm-hmm. The very good ones are the ones that are based on gamification. They've got interesting, attractive, game-based. Some of them are very, very good. They're a supplement to learning. You still need a teacher. It's good to have this coordinated or integrated into a program. But goodness, some of them are absolutely outstanding. You know, some of them are very, very good. They're well thought through. They encourage discourse, engagement, use, things that your teacher's not going to be able to do with you. The teacher might have 20, 30 kids in the class. Mm-hmm. If you can integrate this with your classroom activity, then you've got all this extra in your own time, very personalized activity. So it tracks you as the learner, what your needs are, what your achievements and challenges are. I see them as a supplement, and some of them are very good. And in any case, there's going to be more and more of them. We can't say no to them. They're already a reality. I was in Taiwan last year, and there was an American woman that we were buying some tickets to something, and she refused to use English in this place. She used a handheld translation device, which gave her instantaneous Chinese. Now, these are quite sophisticated. I mean, these things didn't even exist 10 years ago.
No.
We can't be saying is, you know, we say no to technology. But obviously we have to be discerning. We can't say yes to any old thing. A lot of it is rubbish. Some of it is very good. So you need to investigate which ones are well designed and have good material.
Starting a new life in Australia isn't easy.
A lot of companies have rejected me.
Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm gonna quit, I've given up.
Work in Progress is a podcast to help skilled migrants rebuild their careers in a new country. You'll hear inspiring real-life stories, expert advice, and valuable tips to help you find a job and advance your career. Work in Progress. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
There is something I say, and I believe it, that everything starts from home, from the families, for the kids, up to the age of 18, when they become adults, okay? Including their education, including of learning a language, including of learning the Greek language, if we're talking about Greek family. Parents are very responsible for not taking that seriously, very seriously, the Greek language. Is that a fact? Do you believe that?
Well,
can we blame the parents here?
Well, I don't think it's a question of blame. It's a question of social pressure. And the what the Greek Australian parents are doing is what immigrant parents everywhere do, which is that they try very hard in the home with the Greek. Many of them do. And Greek Australians have been better at retaining the language than some other groups at home. This is definitely, the research shows this. However, they're not magicians. They can't work against social pressure. So by the second and third generation, especially if there's out marriage, the language loss becomes very high. And the Greek Australian community is an aging community. The demographic is aging and it's not replenished. I mean, during the economic difficulties of the last 15 years, there were new arrivals came from Greece, but that were small numbers, and many of them returned or they went to other places. So it's not a replenished community. The migration from Greece is basically finished. So it's inevitable that the language is going to struggle in this situation. So I wouldn't say blame. I would say social pressure. But that's why through Pharos, we've been running a series of parent seminars dedicated to working with parents to encourage them to work, A, with the grandparents, with people in the old people's homes. These are the resources where Greek language lives, including here
but
at
they're
its
not
best.
Participating, though.
Unfortunately.
Okay. I mean, I've been to one.
Yeah, you
it
can.
Was a really beautiful session. I mean, why they're not attracted by that? There should be, like, so many Greek parents there, Greek-Australian parents there.
I was hoping for a bigger participation. We, you know, you have to keep in mind, everyone at Pharos is a volunteer. We don't have any resources. Correct. We do all of this on the basis of our belief in it. And we're committed to this. We're going to do it again in February. We have the Speak Greek in March activity. We've had some resources granted to us from Mike Zafiropoulos that had started this Speak Greek in March activity some years ago. We've been using that this year in some activities for parents and also immersion activities. But we're going to put this together in a very big way next March with activities for parents, students, the entire family, a kind of 360-degree ecology of the Greek language here. But I do feel that the interest should be greater. We've also had some seminars for all the media, the Greek media, and we invited the press and the radio and others. So we're trying to work at lots of levels because the situation of the language is that people think that when you're studying the language at school, you've kind of solved the problem. But it's also the opportunity to use it and the desire and practice of doing so. And people need to get into their minds the fact that every day, even if you aren't 100% confident in your own use of it, you can encourage your children to do it. You can bring apps at home. You can have a room in the house, which you call the Greek room, in which everyone tries to use only Greek. You can have stream Greek television and watch these programs together and learn together. We would like to see more parents reactivate their own knowledge of the language with their children so everyone is a joint learner. Now, we have a lot of very concrete advice based on research. These are evaluated methods that can help people to do this, and it can be really good fun, bonds parents and children
and
together.
There are many resources there online and everywhere, videos and everything.
Their resources are incredible. And for Greek, they're just as strong as they are for other languages, maybe from bigger communities. So they're definitely there, and they're very good. They're designed by Greek-speaking teachers and academics.
You were in Greece recently. I know Greeks in Greece get very enthusiastic when they see that we want to preserve our language and a culture and everything. And then you went there. How was it?
Well, I had almost 2 weeks. And
you
I
met
was,
even politicians.
Yes, I did. I had a big conference, which I was honored to open at with the Greek Applied Linguistics Association and other people at the Aristotle University in Thessaloniki. And that was very, very splendid. And I met people involved with the maintenance of Greek in Germany and Canada and other places. So we had a lot of exchanges that were very interesting. Then I went to Athens and was involved with the launch of APOL, the Research Institute for Language Policy and Multilingualism. Mm-hmm. Distinguished Professor Bessie Dendrinos, who's someone I've known for 30 years, and they devoted an entire session, an international seminar session, to the Pharos Initiative. So this small thing we started in Melbourne has received big international recognition through the Athens University, which was a great honour. I then had a visit to the Hellenic Parliament, which was wonderful. I met quite a few politicians, visited the research centre where they do the papers of research for the politicians. I met the Prime Minister's sister. I met the Minister for Education. I met the Minister for Higher Education. Had a lot of discussions on these things. And we've got a plan now, which we're going to develop to try and make the strategy that we have been building through Pharos here an international method, a new design for this. I raised this with the Minister for
Education. For the Greek language in other countries.
For the Greek language around the world. I described this to the minister, and she was very interested in it and said that she would make some kind of endorsing statement. So at the moment, in fact, later this week, I'm going to be on a Zoom with the colleagues at Athens University about the basic outline of it. Then we're going to produce a draft. There's a some colleagues at Strasbourg University in France who are going to help us. So we're going to connect a group of people around the world who are going to put the basic bones to this on the evidence of what research tells us. Because we have to keep in mind that what the Greek government supports, but this is not unique to Greece. I've looked at this in relation to what the Italian government does with Italian. They are not updated, I have to say this. The research in this area has proceeded very fast, and governments are sometimes behind the action. And the research tells us some very important principles of language maintenance across the generations. So we want to write this new design for what the government could do to maintain the language, to support the learning of this language, based on the latest research evidence. That includes what we were talking about before, psychological issues, but also pedagogy, ways of teaching, and technology. And the fact that, a child who learns and maintains Greek in Australia will probably be involved in trilingualism. You need to keep this in mind. They'll 100% be speakers of English. They almost certainly will be going to a school that will teach it a language other than Greek and English, and then Greek. So we're imagining that we'll have to think about this as a trilingual challenge. So we're going to, it's just very much at the beginning of this, and we're going to design it. And then in February next year, we're going to try and release a draft discussion paper, collect responses to this. So I hope you'll take an interest in that and help us disseminate it. And then in June of next year, we're going to have a meeting, probably in France, of people involved in migrant language maintenance all around the world. And we'll have a special session on Greek as part of an international conference on this topic. And if it's ready by then, we'll release it and we'll go back to the Minister for Education. She's expressed an interest to follow us and is going to nominate someone in her ministry who will be our liaison. So we're going to try and keep the ministry in touch with this. We hope that they will update what they support, what they give money to, but even if they don't have a huge amount of money, just the encouragement, and also to
understand. Is that enough, the encouragement? If you get a lot of money, wouldn't that be substantial for your work?
Of course, we would need some resources, of course, but we're going to go ahead anyway. We can do a lot of this work, but we have no resources at the present. It would be splendid to have some more. But I think let's do the work. Let's put the ground down. Let's get it done. And then we will show people that we are very serious. We're hardworking. We meet every single month for quite a long time. We're regularly in touch. We have our subcommittees. We're a very active group. We now have really delighted to say our friends in Sydney through the Greek Australian Society have created a chapter called Pharos New South Wales. And I'm going to Adelaide later this year, and we're going to be talking about the creation of a chapter of Pharos in South Australia. So it's the same energy in all these places.
Is there anything else that we need to mention and to our listeners, or how can they learn more about the Pharos Tips series also, or how can they be involved?
Yes, well, people can join Pharos and then they receive our newsletter and keep in touch with us. Every 2 or 3 months, we have what we call an open meeting, which we advertise, and that's for anyone in the community to come along and ask us questions. We try and be as democratic and accessible as possible. We're trying very hard to be in the media, to be accessible, to be answerable. We're making as much effort as we can. We don't in favour of any one method or one group. We're just interested and committed to the survival of the language.
Okay, and two questions, I need very short answers. Okay, Professor, one Greek phrase every beginner should master for confidence.
Can you say that again? A learner should learn how to influence when someone speaks to them. I had one chapter, one article about how young people can influence the input that they receive. When they go to the village in Greece or the island or the city that their family comes from and people speak to them in Greek, they should be able to not be overwhelmed by this. So teachers or their parents should be able to teach them to what I call control the input, so that they can say to people in a confident Greek, I'm learning Greek. Please, can you repeat that? Or can you say that again more slowly? Or I missed that word. So that they can retain control of the input. It's very important for the learner to be able to control the pace of the conversation so they can use as much Greek as they possibly can.
Finally, one mistake parents should stop tomorrow when they speak or they're trying to speak Greek to the kids.
I think it's important, especially with younger children, not to correct them too much. Children should be able to continue a conversation, even if they switch over into English. The child is speaking in English. It's called paraphrasing. How the parent can paraphrase what the child says, turn it into Greek, that continues the conversation but accepts the child English. So ways of saying, oh, you could have said it this way without it being judgmental. And there's about 8 or 9 specific, very concrete tips. So these articles are about 1,000 words long in the Greek Herald. You can get all of them online. And they give you very specific examples of, my child said this, this is what I might say in reply, that keeps the conversation going. The very important thing when you're correcting, it's not like being in a classroom. A home is not a classroom. A home is for normal conversation. You know, the child wants to get dinner or go out and they can't find their shoes or whatever. That's the normal pattern of talk in a home. So if you're going to use this as an opportunity for learning Greek, you have to understand the way ordinary conversation works, which is different from a classroom, which is didactic, of course. It's a teaching environment. But in a home, it can be more or less conducive to learning. And this is something that parents can absorb. And this is what we train parents to do, how to be very productive in this. And the sessions we run are very good fun. I mean, it's not like, you know, everyone who does an evaluation say, oh, I had no idea how much enjoyment I could get out of this. So I encourage them to come along to the next session we run and to see that actually, even if you're not confident in Greek yourself, you can still encourage your children and use concrete methods, which we teach you, to build up children's ability to use Greek confidently so they get more and more towards the standard language, but without being made to feel ashamed or embarrassed.
Professor, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Κάντε like, μοιραστείτε, σχολιάστε, ακολουθήστε μας στο Facebook, στο SBS Greek.
Starting a new life in Australia isn't easy.
A lot of companies have rejected me.
Sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm gonna quit, I've given up.
Work in Progress is a podcast to help skilled migrants rebuild their careers in a new country. You'll hear inspiring real-life stories, expert advice, and valuable tips to help you find a job and advance your career. Work in Progress. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.